Mankind gave Al Snow head last Thursday night on SmackDown.
He did what?
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Wow. Well, I guess things really were different in the Attitude Era. This is episode 535 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 18th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster, and I've got some exciting news here to open the show. You may know, if you were following along on Twitter a few days ago, this podcast is now available on Spotify. Now, I am a big fan of Spotify. I'm not just plugging them. I've been using them for a while. I used to actually be a big Pandora user, and once I started using Spotify, I don't think I've used Pandora probably in about a year and a half. I have the whole Spotify premium thing, and you can listen to just podcasts. You bring up any song you want to. Offline downloading was huge for me because I commute to and from work, and so it's nice to be able to listen to stuff offline and not have it eat up my data. So anyway, we are on Spotify now. This has been a long time in the making. Well over a year. I know a lot of you have been asking me, when are you going to be on Spotify? It'd be a lot easier for me to listen that way. Well, now you can. I know a lot of you are very excited about that. So head on over to the Spotify app. You can stream this show. You can download the show if you want to. I think you may have to be a premium member for that, but that's entirely up to you. And so I just wanted to share the good news up front here. A lot of you now will have even more access to this podcast if you do not want to use other means or other apps. You no longer have to do so. You can use Spotify. Also, we have a new shirt up in the store on Pro Wrestling Tees. I mentioned this last week. I said it was sort of WrestleMania themed. It went up a few days ago. It's actually two shirts, same design, one in black, one in white. Always point to the sign. That's the gist of the shirt. Always remember as you head into WrestleMania season, it doesn't matter even if you're a multimillionaire mainstream sports star. You are not immune. Everybody must point to the sign. And if you'd like to pick the shirt up in time for WrestleMania, if you're going to be in New Orleans, going to WrestleMania or any of the shows that weekend, or coming to our meetup, which we are going to be doing in New Orleans, and I'll have details on that very soon, make sure you get the shirt now, because depending on where you are, especially if you're out of this country, it could take a few weeks to get to you. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Don't forget, we've got well over 30 designs in the store. This is just the latest one. And if you like the shirt, don't wait. Don't wait. Get it in time for WrestleMania. Pick it up right now. It ships all over the world, all sizes up to 5XL. So head on over there and do that. Also, if you want to contribute, PayPal, always do so on thesolidmonster.com. Entirely voluntary, entirely up to you. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. If you want to become part of the PayPal crew, you may do so. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on this show. John Luis Cannon Lopez, I thank you for your support as always. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Deadpool James Herrera, The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, who's got his movie podcast on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/Micah Harshaw. Micah Harshaw, he's got his own movie podcast, pretty good over there, so check that out. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Your Girlfriend's Crush, Gary Smith. It's been a while since I've read off Gary's name on here, so thank you. The Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, and John More Money, More Problems, Morin. Thank you very much for all of your support. I appreciate it. This could be some potentially game-changing news here, wrestling included. I wanted to just lead off with this real quick. The FDA this week approved a brand new blood test to detect concussions. It is called the Banyan Brain Trauma Indicator. It looks at elevated levels of two types of protein that are produced in the brain when it gets damaged. These proteins begin to spike as soon as 15 minutes after injury, and it takes about 3 hours to get the results back, so it's not instantaneous. I don't know, for example, if you're a football player, if they could just pull you onto the sidelines and, test you and then know whether or not you have a concussion in time to get you back on the field, but within a few hours you get the results back apparently. Said to be up to 99% accurate in testing. WWE has its impact testing that it uses to test for concussions, but it is not a blood test or anything like that. It's a cognitive exam. It's a series, I think, of cognitive tests that they give you. I'm curious, you know, to see how quickly, if at all, they incorporate this test into their overall testing, if they're a little skittish, if they're not sold on it. But if this becomes the norm, I don't see there being any way they don't incorporate this into their own testing. One of the other positives about this, they say, is that it should cut down on the number of CT scans that are used to test people for lesions and tissue damage, because you're exposed to radiation every time you have a CT scan. I mean, every time you stand up by your microwave, you pop in a TV dinner, you're exposed to radiation. Probably every time you put your smartphone up to your ear. So we're all basically poisoning ourselves no matter what. There's a happy thought, right, to start the show? So anyway, but that could potentially be a huge story to follow going forward, and we'll see if WWE starts doing the same thing. The top story this week is WWE returning to dual-branded monthly pay-per-views and ditching their brand-exclusive shows. No longer will there be Raw-only pay-per-views and SmackDown-only pay-per-views after WrestleMania. They made it official yesterday with the announcement that beginning after WrestleMania, you will get the best of both brands, Raw and SmackDown, live every month on pay-per-view, beginning with the Backlash show on May 6th. There's also a rumor that WWE may be planning a draft that might be held at the Backlash pay-per-view. That has not been confirmed yet, nor has the four-hour thing, which I'll talk more about in a second. Those are still just rumors, but this is not. The new pay-per-view schedule is as follows. WrestleMania 34 coming up on April 8th, Backlash on May 6th, Money in the Bank June 17th, Extreme Rules on July 15th, SummerSlam on August 19th, Hell in a Cell September 16th, which means no more pink rope inside the Hell in a Cell in October. Instead, we'll have the pink rope for TLC on October 21st, Survivor Series November 18th, and Clash of Champions December 16th. Battleground is no more. Payback is no more. No Mercy is gone. Great Balls of Fire has been extinguished. Now, Money in the Bank was already going to be a dual-brand show. They were going to make it one of the big five, quote-unquote. And hopefully, they still haven't, you know, I mean, we're obviously many months away, so they wouldn't say anything, but I would hope that the way they are planning this is that they will have four men from Raw. This is assuming they have eight people in the Money in the Bank match. You have four guys from Raw, hopefully all of whom have to qualify. Same with SmackDown, four men from SmackDown in the men's Money in the Bank match. You do the same thing with the women, four and four. To me, that makes things far more interesting. And what I would do is I would take it a step above and make it where the winner can choose to cash in at any time on whichever champion they choose. Like they did with the Royal Rumble this year, where Nakamura got to choose which champion he was going to face at WrestleMania. The Money in the Bank winner should have that same option, especially if going forward these are going to be dual-branded pay-per-views. At least once a month we know that everybody's going to be under the same roof in the same building. To me, that makes things way more interesting. Overall, I think this is a bad move, but as is the case with most things with this brand split, there's pros to the idea, and there's cons to the idea. This is not a black and white thing, where you can say, this is just 100% bad, or this is 100% good. There's a little bit of both. The pros are that we are finally back down, and to me, this is maybe the biggest one of all, we are finally back down to one pay-per-view per month. We are back down to 12 pay-per-views a year. And I know there are some people listening who wish they would cut that down even more. Maybe cut it down to 8 or 6 or just the big 5. We're never going to go back to those days. And frankly, they have so much talent now they can't. You can't go back to those days. All I ever wanted was for them to go back to the way it used to be in the late 90s when you had one pay-per-view per month. And that's what they're doing now. That's the way it should be. You know, last year was tied with 2006 for the highest number of pay-per-views in a calendar year. They had 16 shows last year. I thought they had 18, but I looked it up. Apparently the number was 16, which is still a lot of shows. And in some cases, not every month, but in some cases, we had two pay-per-views in a month. Which, I guess great for people like me who, you know, do their pay-per-view reviews on YouTube and get, you know, tremendous traffic for them. Those are easily the most traffic videos that I do on my channel, you know, with all the bonus YouTube stuff. But I look at this and I say, despite that, I wish they would cut down on the number of pay-per-views, and now they have. And I think that's the right move to make. Less is more. Now, the other pro is that there's going to be more big stars on each one of these shows. So instead of a show that has, let's say, just Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman, now you'll have those guys, plus AJ Styles, plus Shinsuke Nakamura, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton. So more star power makes it more of a must-see show. I mean, as much of a must-see show as these shows can be. It's not exactly a phrase I would use for most of these shows these days, but the more star power, I think the more excited people get about these shows. And the other pro to this is that dual-branded shows means less filler on those shows. We are a lot less likely to see Mojo Rawley wrestling Aiden English on pay-per-view. Because lots of times on these SmackDown shows, Raw shows too, it feels like they just have time to fill. The roster is too thin. Maybe there's been a lot of injuries. Right now there's a lot of injuries, whatever the reason is. And so at the last minute, they'll throw one, sometimes two matches that were not even announced on the card at the last minute because they have to pad the show. They have to fill time somehow. Now there should be absolutely no reason for them to have to do that. There should be people fighting now for a spot on these shows because spots are so limited. There should be no filler. It's all hands on deck. So those, to me, are the three biggest pros. Now the cons. Dual-branded pay-per-views does not mean Raw versus SmackDown. It does not mean that we are suddenly going to get AJ Styles against Finn Balor and the Usos against the Hardys. All it means is that it's the same Raw matches that you would see and the same SmackDown matches that you would see, only they take place now in the same night. And if you are of the belief that the writing is piss poor, and SmackDown has been a terrible show lately, overall, or it's been a very repetitive show, I mean, it has its moments, but if you are of that belief, if you are not enamored with what's going on Raw and or SmackDown right now, this does absolutely nothing to change that. This is not some magic wand that's being waved that all of a sudden is going to make for compelling great television. It does nothing to treat the problem. It'd be like getting stabbed in the leg and wrapping a bandage around your head to stop the bleeding. That makes no sense. And there were a couple of emails I got after the news was announced asking me about this, and I think people may have read it wrong or understood it wrong, and maybe they heard Raw versus SmackDown. That's not what this is. That's not what dual-branded means. It also means longer shows, most likely. The rumor is that all shows, not just the big five, will now be 4 hours, five, if you count the kickoff show. Now, the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series were all going to be 6 hours, because they're going to be 6 hours because they have two-hour kickoff shows. So those shows are 6 hours. But every other show, including kickoff now, may well be 5 hours. Now, and again, right now that's just a rumor, but you can look at that and say, yes, but if you normally would have, let's say, two pay-per-views some of the months, right, during the year, that are 3 hours each, then for those months, that's 6 hours per month. Now you'll have one show that's only 4 hours. That's one way that people might rationalize that, and that may well be true, right? You look at the numbers, but when you're watching these shows, you don't think about stuff like that. In some cases, you're sitting there going, man, this show is too long. And that's fine for a Royal Rumble and a WrestleMania, although WrestleMania being 7 hours last year and me sitting there like a moron for 7 hours was a bit much. But for the big shows, fine. It's a big show. Typically, those were the only dual-branded shows before, but now going every month, that's a bit much. Now, WWE has not confirmed this to be true yet, but again, the dual-branded thing was a rumor too on The Observer and PW Insider and all these places. And that's since been confirmed. That turned out to be true. Will this turn out to be true as well? We'll see. But right now, that's just a rumor that is not confirmed. The other thing is too many titles now. This is going to be a real issue if they insist on getting all of their champions or most of their champions on every single show. The way to do this would be to alternate. Maybe 1 month you have the IC title defended and the SmackDown tag team titles are on the line, and the next month it's the US title and the Raw tag team titles. So, you know, when one title is not being defended on a pay-per-view, instead, and maybe this is a good ratings device, you can build to a big championship match on TV instead of building to one on pay-per-view. Otherwise, if you insist on having every champion defend on every show, every pay-per-view becomes Night of Champions. You've got two, I call them world titles, I know one is for the frickin' universe, but you got two world titles, you got two secondary titles, you got two sets of tag team titles, you got two women's titles, and oh, by the way, you have a cruiserweight title. Titles mean nothing if everybody gets a belt. If you have a pay-per-view where literally every championship match, or every match, rather, is a championship match, every single month, I mean, what do they even mean at that point? And plus, it leaves no room for anybody to do anything else on the show. You have a big singles grudge match or gimmick match or something, some issue that's been building between two people, which I know to them seems like a foreign concept, the idea of having a one-on-one match. That's not their thing lately. They love their multi-person matches, but those people are going to get the shaft. I was not a fan of bringing the brand split back in the first place. You guys know this. If you've listened to me long enough, you know my thoughts on the first brand split. I turned against it. I hated it. By the end, I couldn't wait for it to die. And by the way, when I did my evaluation a year into the new one, last summer, I called it a mixed bag. So I have talked about this before and what my how my thoughts have evolved on this whole, you know, brand split 2.0. I called it a mixed bag last July when I last talked about this, okay? I laid out what worked so far and what didn't. But I absolutely hated the last one that they did towards the end, the last few years of it, actually. I hated it. Not because I thought it was a bad concept, not because I thought it didn't work at all, from the moment they started it in 2002. I mean, look, I wasn't much a fan of Raw back from like 02 to 04, the dark days, as I call them. The reign of terror. I thought Raw was just, for the most part, it was just awful and boring back then. I know some of you will call me crazy. SmackDown, though, was great. You know, those were the glory days of SmackDown, that 2002, 2003. So there was a period of time when the brand split, you know, it did some good for a lot of people and was kind of fun to follow along with and actually felt like more of a legitimate split. I mean, it didn't last very long, but there have been times where, you know, it was actually fun to follow along and I thought that it was working and it was doing them some good. But the concept was fine. It was because they didn't honor it as a true split. As time went on, they got lazy. They got lazy and they treated SmackDown like shit. And for years, I didn't even bother to watch SmackDown. So as great as SmackDown was in those early 2000s, by the time you got to the late 2000s, the early 2010s, SmackDown was a totally missable show. And I didn't even bother watching it. There was no need. If there was something big that happened, it was taped, I could read about it, I watched it, fine. Otherwise, I wasn't going to waste my time. Now, if people were like, oh, we need you to watch SmackDown, you should watch SmackDown, then I would have watched it. There was nobody clamoring for me to watch that. And thank you, by the way, for not forcing me to do that. I watched Raw, I knew what was going on, and for me that was enough. That's how useless SmackDown was for a time. Since the brand split, say what you will about what works and what doesn't, just speaking for myself here, I've watched SmackDown every single week. I haven't missed a single episode. Now, a big part of that is the fact that I felt like I didn't want to miss what was going on with certain guys who I wouldn't see on Monday nights. You have AJ Styles on SmackDown, you have, you know, Nakamura and all these other people. And for a while, SmackDown was better than Raw. SmackDown was firing on all cylinders right after this split took effect in the summer of 2016. Now, well, like I said, I watch SmackDown every week. Some weeks I wonder why I even bother, but I do. But that wasn't the case even 2 years ago. So for that reason, at least, it's been, I guess, a positive. I'm sure I'm not the only one who probably is watching SmackDown now who wasn't before. I also hated, one of the reasons I hated the brand split the last time was, I hated having two world titles. So when they had John Cena and Randy Orton merge them, I was happy. When the brand split died, I danced a jig on its grave. because these people do not know how to do a proper brand split. Or they just give up. Towards the end there, they had Alberto Del Rio as World Heavyweight Champion on SmackDown, defending the title in the opening match on Monday Night Raw. I remember watching that and thinking, why even have the big gold belt anymore? Why not just drop it in the trash can and just set it on fire and just be done with it? What does it even mean? The world champion on SmackDown is opening Raw in some meaningless championship match. Why? I mean, so excuse me if I had little faith in these people to get it right this time around. This time, they have a huge surplus of talent, even with all the injuries. They have just a ton of talent. They have more talent now on their roster than at any other point in their history. And they have more on the way coming up from NXT in the months to come. There's a need now for some kind of a split so that you can get more people on the show and not just the same faces on top. The split has been good to people like The Miz, who probably had his best year last year and you know, the tail end of 2016. Largely because he became the face of SmackDown. I mean, you would say AJ Styles is the face of SmackDown now, but for a while, The Miz, the guy was on fire. And that kind of stalled a little bit when he went to Raw in the Superstar Shakeup, which didn't really do SmackDown a whole lot of good. But he rebounded, and Miz, I find Miz to be an entertaining part of the Raw brand now, but on SmackDown, the guy was on fire. It's been good to Jinder Mahal. I don't much care for Jinder Mahal. I'm glad he's no longer champion. I wouldn't have put the belt on him in the first place. That's 6 months he can never get back. But for him, it's been, you know, a career-changing thing, the fact that he was drafted over to SmackDown and was put in that position even if just for a few months. You know, and he is a bigger star now than he was before. The bar is very low when I say that, because the guy was basically jobber fodder. I mean, that's what he was. There's no place lower to go than being on the unemployment line. That's how low he was. I mean, he could have been elevated to the U.S. title, and that would have been better for him. You know, I don't think anybody expected him to be WWE champion. But, you know, for him, certainly, it was a benefit. Elias has been the beneficiary of the brand split as well, and also Samoa Joe being hurt. But Elias has benefited from it. Jason Jordan has benefited from it. These are guys that probably would not have been getting these opportunities that they're getting now were it not for there being a brand split. Even an act like Titus Worldwide. It is a total preliminary act, and I personally don't care about it, but you might, and even if you don't, they sure do. You can kiss guys like that goodbye without a brand split, I'll tell you that much. So for a lot of the mid-card, this would just be death, and the split forces them to put people on TV every single week and give them a chance. Some get over, a lot of them don't. Would we have Rusev Day right now were it not for the brand split? Probably not. And I don't want to imagine a world without Rusev Day. What does this mean for the brand split going forward? I see a lot of doom and gloom. This is the first nail in the coffin. This is what happened last time. This is the beginning of the end. I'm not going to say that. I don't think this means that there is going to be an end to this brand split. They're not even 2 full years into this thing. I think, here's what I think is going on. My own opinion. I think it may have the most to do with money. They already eliminated Pyro from the budget, right? We've known that. Pyro's been gone for a while now, except for WrestleMania. It's entirely possible they saw how much that it was costing them to run 14 shows or 15 shows, whatever it was going to be. They may have looked at the network numbers and said, you know what, we need to scale back. We need to scale back to 12 and make them dual-branded because it's costing us money to run these extra shows. We're not getting anything out of it. We're not bringing in all these new viewers. We're not making all this extra money. If anything, maybe it's costing them money. We got to scale back. Maybe cutting the pyro wasn't enough. But they're doing so at the expense of their own brand split because I think this hurts more than it helps. It's also going to have a negative impact on the women's divisions if you think they're going to be featured as much as they are now. I don't see that happening. At least, you know, the key women might be, you know, people like Sasha Banks and Asuka and Charlotte, they may not have anything to worry about, but you've got this whole other roster between Raw and SmackDown. You've got this whole other roster of women who are not going to benefit from this. You know, Becky Lynch, I said when the brand split started, one of the exact people I named as somebody who I thought would be the beneficiary of the brand split was going to be somebody like Becky Lynch, who was not the champion at the time, and who was not really the most featured female performer, But like AJ Styles, I felt like her going to SmackDown would be a good thing because it would give her a chance to be the star on that show. You know, it would give her the chance to be the star of that division. Now, this was before Charlotte was moved over to SmackDown. Obviously, she's the queen bee over there now. Becky sort of taking a back seat. But certainly at the beginning, she was a big beneficiary of that brand split. You know who else was? Natty. Talk about somebody who's just sort of been meandering around on the roster for years now, not doing a whole lot. Natty actually had a chance, after all these years of being in this company, to be a champion again. She was one of the top female heels on that brand. So those are the types of people who actually have benefited from there being a brand split. But it hurts the women's divisions. The cruiserweight division, forget about it. Just, you know, forget about that. But the way I look at it, you broke it, you bought it. Commit to the split. You wanted to do a brand split? You can't turn back now. Commit to the split. Shake up the rosters again. Get that belt off Brock Lesnar. I love Brock, but it's time. Enough. Get that belt off Brock Lesnar. Move AJ Styles over to Raw. This is all post-WrestleMania, by the way. Break up the Shield, because that reunion was cursed from the word go. It's obvious we're not getting a proper Shield reunion anyway. You could always come back to it, you know, in a few more years. There's no need to have all three of those guys on the same roster. So either move Roman Reigns, I know, or move Seth Rollins over to SmackDown. If you're going to move AJ to Raw, you got to, you know, tit for tat. You got to move one big name over to Raw, one big name over to SmackDown, at least one, if not more than one. Move Kevin Owens back to Raw, or Sami Zayn, but just split them up. They got to get those two guys away from each other. Once this angle and this friendship of theirs runs its course, which should be at WrestleMania, it's time to split them up. I was shocked when they moved Owens over to SmackDown and Zayn followed him, because I thought they were going to split them up. If you remember, we were getting Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn matches, it felt like, every week. And look, I think the two of them work very well together. I didn't mind seeing them wrestle. But you get to a point where it's like, all right, enough's enough. I was shocked when they moved Zayn over and kept them together on the same roster. It's time to break those two up as well. So move Kevin Owens back to Raw. You can keep Sami Zayn on SmackDown. And keep them apart for at least a year. Let Bobby Roode get his run as a heel. Give Rusev a chance as a babyface. They had their chance to do a double turn or start one a few weeks ago. They didn't take it. Post-WrestleMania, if they do a draft, if they do a shake-up, whatever the hell they want to call it, those are two moves I would make. Roode goes heel, Rusev goes face and gets a chance to step up to that next level. Call up some new blood from NXT. We need some new women. If anything needs a shake-up, I think it's those women's divisions, especially the one on SmackDown. That's not doing anything for me right now. Call up a couple of new tag teams. The Authors of Pain, they seem like they're ready to come on up. And for the love of God, enough with the repetitive multi-person matches every single week. Are you that creatively bankrupt that all you could think of doing are the same six-person tag team matches every single week? We're getting Charlotte and Becky Lynch and Naomi again against the Riot Squad this Tuesday. And all the four ways and all the five ways. Enough. I like a multi-person match as much as the next person. We had a five-way. Funny enough. On Raw Monday night, I thought it was actually a hell of a match, and it made sense because it was five guys competing for a spot in the chamber. Fine. I'm not saying that all multi-person matches should be banned. But there's a limit to how many that you should be doing. And I look at that and I say that's just creative laziness. If all you could think of, instead of building some kind of an issue between two people, is, well, let's just shove a whole bunch of people in the match together. You are creatively bankrupt. These changes need to be made. You don't have to kill the brand split to do it. You can strengthen it. You can make the right moves that need to be made in order to make this thing work. Instead of abandoning ship or just maintaining the status quo, let's just keep doing what we're doing because that's working out so well. Yeah, it's working out so well that you had to abandon the brand exclusive pay-per-views and go to a dual-branded format. Yeah, how's that working out for you? But those are the changes that need to be made. Now, Raw from Monday night, they were in San Jose. We had 2,200 of you cast your vote on Twitter, 61% thumbs up, 39% thumbs down. That's pretty good. We had three really good matches on Monday. John Cena against The Miz, Sasha Banks against Bayley in Bayley's hometown, and yes, the Fatal 5-Way main event. We also learned that Ronda Rousey is headed to the Raw brand. No surprise there. Obviously, Raw is the flagship. That is Stephanie McMahon's show on TV. And also, they were never sending her to SmackDown. We see the way they've treated SmackDown lately. If you thought they were sending Ronda Rousey as a full-time performer to the SmackDown brand, then you haven't been paying attention. She will be at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view to formally sign her Raw contract. Now, supposedly, ticket sales have been slow for the show, and so they decided to put the Rousey contract signing on the pay-per-view instead of on TV. Please, do not have her point to the stupid sign, whatever you do. We got enough sign pointing from her at the Royal Rumble to last an entire year. And that was cringeworthy. And I didn't mind so much what they did with her having her come out and go to shake Asuka's hand. And everybody kind of flipped their wig. Oh, it took away from Asuka in the Rumble. No, it didn't. But her pointing at the sign was stupid. So hopefully we don't have her doing that again. She got a lot of boos on this show Monday night when Kurt Angle announced this and said her name, which isn't good. I like her as a heel eventually. I said this a few weeks ago, but, you know, not right now. I mean, look, if this turns into a Mayweather-Big Show situation, if you remember, they booed Mayweather when they were supposed to cheer him, and they cheered Big Show instead, who was supposed to be the heel, at least initially when they started booking that whole angle. I mean, there at least, Mayweather should have been the heel. He deserved to be booed. He walked around all cocky and arrogant and throwing money at people, and so how or why they thought he would be the babyface, it just blows my mind. I think originally the plan was him and Rey Mysterio were going to be a tag team against Big Show, and I forget. I think it was going to be Big Show and De La Hoya, I think maybe was the original plan. But Rey was hurt, and they wouldn't let him wrestle. But anyway, at least in that situation, fine. It worked out well. People booed Mayweather, as they should have. He was the heel. If that's what happens here, though, that is a disaster. Imagine Stephanie McMahon as the babyface going into WrestleMania. I don't even think I could stomach that. So hopefully this was just a one-time thing with the crowd. You know, maybe she told San Jose to go to hell once and they don't like her. I don't know, but I'm still pulling for The Rock to be her partner. I would like to see Rock and Triple H get in the ring one more time before they call it quits. Plus, Eric Rowan should not be The Rock's last opponent of record at WrestleMania. I'm sorry, that just seems wrong. Kurt Angle also announced that his son, Jason Jordan, will not be cleared in time to compete at WrestleMania. Is it a storyline? Is it reality? Are they just trying to swerve us when Jordan comes back in a few weeks? I don't know. I'm suspicious. We were told that this was a minimally invasive surgery. And minimally invasive surgery is still surgery. It's still neck surgery. He may very well not be cleared in time for WrestleMania, but I remain unconvinced that that is 100% fact. But the crowd in San Jose cheered when Kurt said that Jordan was too hurt to compete at WrestleMania. And then he admonished the crowd like he was their dad and they stole money out of his wallet. He said, if they get joy out of somebody getting injured, they should be ashamed of themselves. When the crowd in Toronto last year booed Bayley, that was last summer, when she came out with her arm in a sling after she was hurt and she had to miss SummerSlam, that was a very real injury. I was talking to her about it when we did the 2K18 party. I was asking her, when are you going to be back? And she was telling me she was going through rehab. So the timing for her, you know, not being able to be on that SummerSlam show, she was gutted. I mean, you could see it in her face. She was very upset. And I mention this because she came out on Raw, her arm in a sling, to give this very real speech and thank the fans. And people booed her. They didn't laugh at her or cheer the injury, but they booed her throughout the entire promo. And at the time, I said that was disrespectful. I thought that was incredibly disrespectful. Was not happy with the Toronto crowd for what they did. I'll give the fans a pass here, because Jordan is a heel, who is supposed to be booed. Plus, I mean, as recently as a few weeks ago, it almost seemed as though he was faking an injury on TV, right? We didn't quite know if it was real or not, so the whole thing has been a storyline from the word go. The guy's a heel, people boo him, that's his thing. And so I could give them a pass for that. I think it's still twisted to cheer for somebody being injured when they are legitimately injured, but they probably figured it's all just part of the storyline. With Bayley last year, that was not the case at all. They were just being assholes. So before somebody else throws that in my face, that's the difference between those two situations. Now this leaves Seth Rollins in a very weird spot going into WrestleMania. A match with Kurt Angle, I think, would be the most likely end result. Inserting him into the Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns match is an idea that some of you have emailed me and floated, making it a three-way. I think making it a three-way, not that Brock and Roman is going to be a bad match. I like their match at WrestleMania 31, but I think if you insert Rollins, I think it makes it an even better match. The problem is they already did that a few years ago, right? That's what Rollins came in, he cashed in, it became a triple threat. Now, granted, it was only a triple threat for all of, what, 90 seconds? But they still did that already in the main event of WrestleMania. I don't see them doing that again. I think making him, you know, making Seth Rollins Ronda Rousey's partner makes no sense because there's no issue between Rollins and Triple H anymore. That was settled last year. That's just shoehorning him into a match that he has no business being in. At least one-on-one with Kurt, it gets Kurt on the show, and there's a backstory there with Jason Jordan. There's actually a storyline explanation that you can weave to get the two of them in the ring together. Now, Rollins did come out on the show. He did this fiery babyface promo. He wants to see the old Seth Rollins come back, and everybody cheered. Everybody reacted big, like they wanted to see that too. Like, this guy's been in a holding pattern for so long, and he's been doing tag team matches for so long that they're ready for the old Seth Rollins to come back. And he said he wanted in on the Elimination Chamber match, and Kurt said, okay, I'll add you to the Second Chance Fatal 4-Way later tonight. We'll make it a 5-Way, and if you win, then you get the last spot in the chamber. So, Kurt Angle making a Fatal 5-Way and stealing ideas from Daniel Bryan now. Sasha and Bayley went one-on-one in Bayley's hometown. Good match, and the hometown star got a rare win, right? That's great for Bayley, because how often does that happen, right? When the hometown person comes in and wins. Sasha's husband, who's also the costume designer for WWE, said that her pink ring gear on TV last Monday was a tribute to Owen Hart's gear from King of the Ring 1994, which is very cool. I thought that was the best gear, by the way, that Owen ever wore, was that all pink gear that he had at King of the Ring. I don't think he ever wore it again after that pay-per-view, which is kind of sad. But second row, belly to Bayley. Bayley gets the win. She was immediately demolished by Nia Jax, as was Sasha Banks, but she won, so that's what counts. Now, they did tease after the match that something might happen, that one of them might turn, that, you know, they were kind of face-to-face. What's going to happen? Are they going to hug? Are they going to shake hands? Is somebody going to stab the other in the back? And that never, we never had a chance to find out because Nia ran in and attacked them both. And that's good because it drags things out a little bit more. It makes you wonder. Maybe something will happen in the chamber, right? You want to build anticipation, build up to it. Elias. This was one of the other more entertaining segments on the show. Elias came out to sing his new song called The Elimination Chamber Blues. Or he started to sing the song anyway. This brought out Braun Strowman, who got the Elias entrance. It was all dark in the arena. JoJo interrupts and she goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, Braun Strowman." And all of a sudden, a spotlight shines on Strowman. Braun is sitting up on stage, doing his best Nicki Minaj impression, bringing out the super bass. This thing was gigantic. He started strumming it. He broke the strings. He started singing. He's got a much better voice than Elias does, I'll tell you that. Since he couldn't play, though, because the strings were broken, he said, "Oh, I'm going to bring this down to the ring." And Elias attacked him. He ends up getting power slammed. He tries crawling to the back. Elias is trying to crawl to the back and get away. But before he could get there, Strowman smashes the bass over his back and shatters it. And I know some people hated this because it was comedy, and they think Braun Strowman should not be doing comedy. But it worked. I thought it was great. And in the end, he destroyed the other person. So I fail to see what the issue is here. This wasn't Goldust putting a wig on Goldberg's head and Goldberg just standing there like an idiot and taking it. This was Braun Strowman smashing a giant bass over this guy's back and murdering him. Which is what he does, by the way. Braun Strowman goes around with, whether it's a bass or an ambulance or an announce desk or a grappling hook, whatever he can get his hands on, and he kills people. That's his gimmick. They announced Ivory for the WWE Hall of Fame. So, naturally, they're going to put the Glow Girl in the Hall of Fame this year, and I don't mean Naomi. Although, I'm surprised they didn't put Naomi in the Hall of Fame, since she's so popular, apparently. Number 4 on that SmackDown Top 10 last week. But it's not a coincidence of all the years to put Ivory in. Someone thought to do it right after that Glow show was such a big hit on Netflix. So maybe if we get some kind of big trade deal maybe this year going with China, we'll get the other China in next year's class, I'm thinking, maybe. On the Jeff Jarrett rumor, I know people have been talking about this. Jeff Jarrett possibly going into the Hall of Fame. I don't buy it. I mean, me personally, I don't buy it. There is smoke to the fire, apparently. He is rumored to be under consideration. His name was on the list, on the internal list. His name was on there for consideration for the Hall of Fame. Beyond that, there's nothing concrete to report. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, we don't have a confirmation one way or the other. Now, he recently completed WWE-sponsored rehab. You never say never in wrestling. There's no such thing as a burn. They're really, you know, these days, there's no such thing as burn bridges anymore. They have little sailboats now. You can always find your way to the other side. There's nothing, there's really no such thing as a burn bridge. Jarrett was on Vince McMahon's shit list for years. He wouldn't even bring him in when WCW folded. He seemed to take glee in firing Jarrett on TV the night of that Raw Nitro simulcast. He fired him right there on TV. But the way I see it, you know, if Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff can hug it out on TV, and Bret Hart can let bygones be bygones after over a decade, then Jeff Jarrett can be back one day too. I don't think today is that day. I don't think he's going in, but apparently, like I said, he was on the internal list. Maybe Road Dogg put him on there. And that wouldn't even be the worst thing that Road Dogg has done of late. We'll get to SmackDown here in a second. Is Jeff Jarrett a Hall of Famer? Look, we've been through this before. There is no set criteria for the WWE Hall of Fame. The number of championships you won, or WrestleMania main events you were in, it doesn't matter. And Jarrett has had quite a bit of success in his career. You may not like the guy. You may not look at him at being above a certain level. But wherever he's gone, from Memphis to WWE to WCW to TNA, obviously TNA, he was running the place for a while. But he's had success. And in WWE, he's been a tag team champion multiple times. He's been Intercontinental champion 6 different times. Former WCW champion. He's been a name in several different promotions. He's had success in each one. So he deserves to be in there as much as anybody else does. If it were my Hall of Fame, he would not be in. I don't think of Jeff Jarrett as a Hall of Fame performer. But I'm sure he'll get in there at some point. The Fatal 5-Way with Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Apollo Crews, Bray Wyatt, and Woken Matt Hardy ended in controversy with Rollins and Balor simultaneously pinning Wyatt after a Tower of Doom spot out of the corner. I love it. I love it. The eater of pins is now the eater of double pins. Just when you think it can't get any worse. Somehow, they find a way for this guy. I just think, when I saw him get pinned by two guys, I just thought to myself, that is just priceless. Now, see, a Bray Wyatt superfan, I don't know if these exist, they might, but a Bray Wyatt superfan might look at this and argue that it took not one, but two people to pin him. One person was not enough. It took two. Of course, that ignores his win-loss record and all the other times he lost. But you and I know better than that. Now, by virtue of Miz losing to John Cena earlier in the show, Miz will now have to enter the chamber first. And we already know Elias is going to enter last. The question coming out of this show was, who's going to fill the final spot? I thought it made for a nice little cliffhanger ending to build some interest into next week's show. You know, so what do? They go and spoil it a few minutes later in a Facebook video. Kurt Angle has decided that because both men won, that the men's chamber match will now for the very first time include 7 men. Rollins and Balor both are in the match, so I assume the match then is going to have to start out as a 3-way, unless they build a new pod somewhere for one of these guys. It's probably going to open as a triple threat, and then each time, you know, a chamber will open, a pod will open inside the chamber. I don't know why, I mean, to me, this was just such an easy thing. I don't know why they didn't either just leave the cliffhanger for tomorrow night's show, and then do Balor versus Rollins to determine the final spot. Like, if the end game here was to get both guys in and do the first ever 7 men, and they love these first, you know, first time ever, man. Let me tell you, I feel like every week it's something else. First time ever, first time ever women's this, first time ever women's that, first time ever 7 person chamber match. You know, first time ever we're going to have a good show. Wouldn't that be nice? But if they wanted both guys in, they could have had people run in, cause the DQ, and then have Kurt Angle end the go-home show by coming out and saying, well, you know what? Both you guys are going to be in the chamber. And you actually end the show and go off the air with the announcement that for the first time ever, it's going to be a 7-person Elimination Chamber match. But you have Balor versus Rollins as your big main event on TV tomorrow night. I don't know why they didn't just do that. That seemed to be the most sensible place to go with this. To this day, I don't understand why Jack Tunney didn't just tell Lex Luger and Bret Hart, get back in the ring and just restart the match at that Rumble in 94. I remember thinking that as a kid. I'm like, just restart the match. They both fell out over the top rope at the same time. Just ring the bell and let's start over again. Or you could have done a match between them. No, we have to have a coin flip. We're going to have 2 championship matches at WrestleMania. It's ridiculous. But instead, what they've done is this. They have announced a 7-man gauntlet match for Raw tomorrow night with all 7 participants in the men's chamber. That's their big idea that they wanted to do. Another multi-person match. What else is new? SmackDown Live from Bakersfield, California. This Twitter poll was very telling. Over 1,600 of you voted. 47% thumbs up, 53% thumbs down. That is the first time in a long time that I can remember that SmackDown in one of these polls has been sub 50%. It is underwater. Raw, you know, for its part and all the flaws Raw has consistently been above that mark for some time now. But SmackDown just continues to slide. And it's an alarming trend with this show when you consider how things were in the months after the brand split first started. It's like 2 totally different shows now. It really is. It's like 2 completely different shows. Ever since the Superstar shakeup, it has been this slow decline. It has its moments. There's some good matches. But it just doesn't feel the way that SmackDown felt when it felt fresh. And it felt like, hey, this is kind of feels like the A show. I don't know anybody who feels that way now. Although I'm sure I'll hear from them now. But I don't know too many people who would agree with that. Now, the match between Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin never happened after Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they jumped Corbin backstage. Then they came out, they laid out Ziggler. Shane McMahon made Owens versus Corbin and Zayn versus Ziggler, with the stipulation that if Corbin and Ziggler win their matches, both men would be added to the Fastlane main event. Sound familiar? Are you having deja vu after what just happened on Raw with Balor and Rollins? Wouldn't be the first time. Remember Absolution and the Riot Squad? Boy, they sure seem similar, huh? Debuting in the same week, no less. I see a lot of overlap here. And Shane told Daniel Bryan, if either one of your boys, that being Owens and Zayn, get involved in the other's match, they're going to be out of the Fastlane main event. His boys. Bryan seemed rather nonplussed by the whole thing, probably just counting down the days to the end of his contract. He don't care. Charlotte pinned Sarah Logan with the natural selection. That was the best part of the entire match. Sarah Logan sold this. This was an RVD-level sell right here. She sold that natural selection like she got spiked right on top of her head. Great sell on her part. The rest of this was not very good. This was not very good. I did not like this. Owens and Corbin, this was very weird. Both of them are heels. So you put 2 heels in the ring one-on-one, it's going to be weird in terms of crowd reaction. I will be damned, though. There were fans in the crowd at one point chanting Baron Corbin's name late in the match. Corbin won with the end of day, so he's in. At that point, that made the Fastlane main event a fatal four-way, but we weren't done yet. Bobby Roode came out. He announced that he was going to be continuing the U.S. title open challenge that John Cena started. He wanted Randy Orton to come out after what Orton did to him the week before. He laid him out with an RKO out of nowhere. Orton came out. He was going to accept Roode's challenge when Jinder Mahal interrupted. And Jinder tried to stir the pot. He was pointing out, hey, Randy, you know, you're ranked number 9. This guy over here, Bobby Roode, he was ranked number 5. And so they're at least trying to work the top 10 into the storyline, the top 10, which otherwise makes no sense. They're trying to incorporate it into the story and stir some shit between these guys, which is fine. Roode pointed out that Jinder didn't even make the top 10, which is true. And he told Orton, look, you know, you're probably voted number 9 because people don't like you because they're tired of you laying them out with RKOs, which is also probably true. Orton then proved him right by hitting an RKO on the healthy Singh brother. And Jinder ended up leaving both guys laying with the Colossus. I don't care personally about any of this. I don't find any of this compelling. I don't find Randy Orton as a babyface compelling. I don't find Bobby Roode as a babyface compelling. I don't find Jinder Mahal as a babyface or a heel to be compelling. And so you take these three guys, you put them in a program, you put them in a match together. And to me, this is the recipe for insomnia. So there's just absolutely nothing interesting about these three together. You know, individually, you know, Roode, I was a big fan of his in NXT. Hopefully one day he'll get some of that back. Orton, I'm not a huge fan of anyway, but, you know, he has his moments. And then there's Jinder, and Jinder is Jinder. What are you going to do? So we had New Day. New Day came out for a pancake eating contest where Big E tried to break a world record by eating over 100 pancakes in under 8 minutes. Riveting television. Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin came out. They told New Day to go open their own IHOP and leave the wrestling to the serious competitors. And then they knocked a plate of pancakes on the ground. Big E got very upset. This is what led to a match. I'm not sure if this was better or worse than Chris Jericho spilling coffee on Kane being the inspiration for their feud. New Day won. Not that any of this even matters. They announced Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Naomi against the Riot Squad for TV this Tuesday. It's like, when I saw that graphic, you know, SmackDown is like Groundhog Day. We just had Groundhog Day here a few weeks ago. SmackDown is Groundhog Day. Road Dogg is Bill Murray. Wakes up each day and writes the same stuff over and over again. Probably doesn't even remember what he wrote the day before. That's exactly what this is. We had Dolph Ziggler backstage with Renee Young and his great explanation for dropping the United States Championship and walking out for 7 weeks was that he wants to be WWE Champion and to go to the main event of WrestleMania. That's what he said. That's why he came back. I don't know. To me, walking out would seem like a pretty terrible idea, but I guess I was proved wrong because Shane McMahon put him right in a championship match. Why doesn't everybody just walk out? Why doesn't Rusev walk out? You don't think Rusev wants to be WWE champion and go to the main event of WrestleMania? Why doesn't Mojo Rawley walk out? I'm not sure anybody would even notice if he did. But why doesn't he walk out? Why doesn't Zack Ryder walk out? If anybody has a reason to walk out, it's him. So, Dolph is talking. He's like, no one can outshine me. Nobody can do what I do. This is what I was put on this planet to do, he says. I still want to know, I'd rather hear from Shane, frankly, to hear his explanation for why this is all okay to him, and Brian, why this is acceptable to them, but okay. I'm not expecting that. What I'm wondering also is, what's going to happen when Dolph Ziggler inevitably fails again, which is sort of his MO? What's going to happen when he fails and he does not go to the main event of WrestleMania? Then what? What will his explanation be then when he sticks around? Because you know he's not leaving, like on TV, you know he's not going to walk out again. So I'm very curious what his explanation at that point will be. Are we going to get Hobo Dolph? Is he going to walk around, his clothes are all in tatters, you know, a bottle in a brown paper bag? I'm just wondering what the next evolution is here of this Dolph Ziggler character. Maybe he'll disappear again for a year. Maybe he'll come back next year and get dumped out of the Royal Rumble again in 90 seconds. Maybe that'll become a recurring... could be his recurring gimmick, like Pete Rose. We look forward to his annual appearances where he shows up and gets humiliated. He did get the win on this show over Sami Zayn. Another very weird match like Owens and Corbin. You don't really know who to root for. Who do you root for? Am I supposed to be rooting for Dolph? Why? Because Sammy's the heel? Because Dolph wants to go to WrestleMania? Who gives a fuck? I don't care. He's been whining on TV for months now. Think back a few months. All those TV segments, all that time he wasted of hours. I'm supposed to cheer for this guy now? I don't think so. Crowd came around at the end. They were giving him this is awesome chance. He won with the super kick. So now we have a 7-man chamber match and a 5-man tornado match as the main events for the next two pay-per-views. Multi-man mania is running wild here in WWE. Now, last week, I went out of my way not to mention the reports of Dolph Ziggler signing a new contract, because at the time, it was reported by one person on a podcast that I had never even heard of before. And people ran with this like it was gospel. So I didn't want to mention it. Now it appears to be true. There was a note in this week's Observer that mentioned Miz, Mojo Rawley, and Dolph Ziggler are all said to have signed new contracts. Miz, I mentioned already, that's a 4-year deal. The Ziggler deal is said to be for 2 years, and according to Sports Illustrated, it is said to be for $1.5 million a year. I call bullshit. I believe he's re-signed. I think that part is true. He may have even gotten a substantial raise. I'm sure it was for very good money to convince him to stay. But I don't believe for a second that he re-signed for $1.5 million per year. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Now, that being said, they're obviously, whatever the actual dollar amount is, and I'm sure it's not $1.5 million, I'm sure they're paying him very well. And good for him. If the money is anywhere even like remotely close to that amount, frankly, if the money was even a little over half that amount, he would be a fool to turn it down. And it's also being reported, despite comments that he made on the Edge and Christian podcast a few months ago, where he kind of, he was talking about his displeasure with where he is on the card, and he was teasing it. I might leave WWE. I might go work somewhere else. I have to make a decision. I have to think about my future. Apparently, he was always planning on signing a new deal with WWE. It was all BS. And there was never any question, at least from WWE's end, that he was going to resign. So what that tells me is this. It tells me that Dolph Ziggler, for whatever public proclamations he may have made about being unhappy with his role on the show, is at the point where he does it for the money. And because it's fun. He enjoys being a WWE superstar. He enjoys the notoriety that it affords him. And he gets paid well. Nothing more, nothing less. Dolph Ziggler is a modern-day member of the Job Squad. Pin me, pay me. And I know I say this a week after he beat Sami Zayn to earn a spot in the main event of the next SmackDown pay-per-view. I'm sure it will be his last for quite a while. But Dolph Ziggler is the very definition of a Job Squad member in 2018. Pin me, pay me. And there's nothing wrong with that. He's going to be 38 years old. If he likes his job, if he likes the people that he works with, and he gets paid well, more power to him. I stopped caring a long time ago. He still has his fans, somehow. But me personally, I stopped caring a long time ago. He's a talented guy who should be doing more than he is. I'm not saying he should be the tippy-top guy, but WWE has certainly missed their moment with this guy more than a few times. And I have no doubt that if he left WWE, he would do very well for himself independently, making his own schedule. This is the second or third time now that his contract has come up and he has chosen to stay. He has chosen not to pursue that path. Whatever makes you happy. Pin me, pay me is a way of life for Dolph Ziggler. And it has been for a long time now. The Mixed Machka Challenge, Week 5, gave us Rusev and Lana against Elias and Bayley. Elias subbing for the injured Samoan named Joe. I like this one the least of the five so far, which pains me to say because of Rusev's involvement. And he was entertaining enough. I don't know. Not enough Rusev. Maybe that was the problem. He and Lana were out there wearing matching outfits. That was kind of funny. Lana tripped up Bayley on the ropes. Bayley fell face first down onto the top turnbuckle, and Lana pinned Bayley. And the announcers called it the first win of Lana's career. She won her first match on Rusev Day. That's awesome. I can't believe that there were people bitching about the fact that Lana pinned Bayley. Like it's the end of Bayley's career. It's like the nail in the coffin for Bayley. She lost to Lana. It's the mixed match challenge. None of this matters. It's all for fun. I don't know why people are getting so bent out of shape about. That's the most ridiculous. That's not, actually, I can't even say that's the most ridiculous thing I heard all week. There were three things that were way more ridiculous than that. I'm going to cover that later in the show. You're not going to believe this. But this was almost as ridiculous, that there were actually people who were upset about this or were saying, oh, Bayley is dead, blah, 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 blah. It's the mixed match challenge, dude. It doesn't matter. It was funny watching the two of them celebrate when the match was over, Rusev and Lana. They were celebrating like they had just won the main event of WrestleMania or something. Now this week it's going to be Nia Jax and Apollo Crews against Charlotte and Bobby Roode in the final first round match. You know, I saw the interview that Rusev did with ESPN.com. He gave an interview about Rusev Day and did you expect this thing to blow up the way it did? And, you know, he was speaking out of character. I don't see how anybody can root against this guy after reading this. You read this and just come away so happy that he hit on this whole Rusev Day thing. He says it was just supposed to be a one-time thing. He never imagined that it would blow up the way that it has. Now he has merch that says Rusev Day. Apparently it's selling very well. He didn't foresee any of this coming. He said he's just having fun. It's the most fun that he's ever had in his entire career. He gets to show everybody that you don't have to be stuck being a foreigner bad guy. That's what he said. That does not have to be my destiny. And I can be much more than that. Yes, he can. And he's showing it right now. And hopefully, after WrestleMania, and if they do some sort of a draft or a shakeup, hopefully he'll be the beneficiary of that. Because if ever there was a time, this guy's been on the roster now, what, about 3-4 years probably? Mostly as a heel, pretty much entirely as a heel. I know people are cheering for him now, but he's really not a babyface. He's been a, you know, the evil heel foreign menace now pretty much for his entire run. I think it's time to give this guy a chance to run in a different direction. If ever there was a time to just capitalize on this popularity beyond just selling t-shirts and calendars, now is the time. Don't waste this. Don't squander this. Give this guy a chance and let's see how far he can go. 205 Live. There's some cruiserweight notes here to go through. On his 27th birthday on Thursday, Rich Swann and WWE came up with what they claim was a mutual agreement on his release from the company. Because I'm sure the man was just itching to lose his job. I'm sure he woke up one morning and said, fire me. Right, I'm sure that's exactly how it went. Unlike Enzo Amore, at least, they wished him well in his future endeavors. Now, if you remember, Swann was arrested for domestic battery and kidnapping back on December 10th after an incident involving his wife, who wrestles as Sue Young. It was after an independent show where she had wrestled, and the two of them got into it physically, and they were in a car, and she tried to jump out of the car. He physically, according to witnesses, grabbed her and, you know, violently pulled her back into the car. And like I said, there were witnesses to all of this, at least two that I know of reading about. But the charges were dropped last month due to insufficient evidence. I see everybody saying, you see, Rich Swann was innocent. This doesn't mean he's innocent. All it means is that there was not enough evidence to proceed. My guess is that she probably refused to testify against him. She's his wife. She loves him. A few weeks after the incident, she was already on social media posting happy photos of the two of them together. She didn't want to testify against him, and so the whole thing fell apart. And it looks like WWE didn't think much of him being innocent either, because they didn't want to associate themselves with him any longer, and they cut bait. Now, lucky for him, there is a thriving indie scene right now, and he's coming straight from WWE, straight from TV, so he'll do just fine. In fact, he's already scheduled for shows with House of Hardcore in a few weeks. We learned this week that Buddy Murphy from NXT, there's a name you haven't heard in a while, he is going to be competing in the Cruiserweight Tournament. In fact, this week he has a first-round match against Arya Daivari. They aired a video package on Tuesday night hyping his debut. They even showed him having to make weight. He came in just under the 205-pound limit. He's gotten a lot of praise from a lot of different people, including Aleister Black. Aleister Black worked with him on some NXT house show loops a few weeks ago, and I remember he really put him over in a tweet a few weeks ago. Murphy is a guy who has been just toiling in developmental for about 5 years, which ironically is the same amount of time that Tyler Breeze was down there for before he finally found a gimmick that worked for him. He was one step away. He was one more failed gimmick away from being cut. I mean, I think he's even admitted that before. And then he had the whole Tyler Breeze thing, and I was a big, big Tyler Breeze fan. He even headlined some NXT shows and takeovers for the NXT Championship, and he really did well down there. And then he got called up to the main roster. and they lost interest in him after a few months. He came up, remember, he feuded with Dolph Ziggler right out of the gate, and after that, it was just all downhill. They didn't do anything with him. And he's been a comedy character ever since. And look, the whole fashion police thing is very entertaining. I think it kind of ran its course, although I guess they're still doing the segments, I believe, on WWE.com. People seem to like the fashion police, and they're entertained by them. So he found something to do, and that's great, but he's a comedy character. That's really all he is. I hope that is not the same fate that awaits Buddy Murphy. And I don't think it is, for this reason. There were stories at the time with Tyler Breeze that Triple H, who worked with Breeze a lot in NXT, right? He was like the proud papa. He really wanted to protect Tyler Breeze when he came up. He saw him at being at a certain level. Not a top level, but like a solid mid-card and maybe even an upper mid-card level. But Vince McMahon disagreed. And at the end of the day, what Vince wants, Vince gets. Because Triple H does not run the show yet. Vince McMahon does. And so Vince lost interest, and that was that. And I think Triple H probably has some of that overprotective parent thing going on with these NXT stars where he's going to give them every chance to succeed, where Vince McMahon may not. He may get bored. He may not see it. I mean, he's 72 years old. He may literally not be able to see it. Triple H, though, he sees things a little bit differently. He works with these guys hand in hand in a way that Vince McMahon doesn't. He knows these guys in a way that Vince McMahon does not. So Triple H can, you know, maybe pull things out of them that Vince McMahon can't. And so that's really kind of the difference between the two of them, and I think what's going on here. But I think Triple H is absolutely the overprotected father, father of a lot of these guys. He wants to see them all succeed because, look, if you want to look at it cynically, okay, Triple H being who he is, if you really want to look at it cynically, he should want every single one of those NXT talents to succeed and to thrive. Because every time they do, it reflects well on him. If he promotes somebody in NXT, if he makes them a champion in NXT, if Bo Dallas is a champion in NXT, and he comes up to the main roster and he's nothing more than a background comedy player, that doesn't make Triple H look good. Triple H made this guy a world champion in NXT. And he's a nobody on the main roster. All that work, all that effort, all that time. Takeover main events. To end up in that spot, to end up as a background player standing behind The Miz. It can't be what Triple H envisioned for this guy when he came up. So, the fact that Murphy is starting out in this tournament on 205 Live, which is now being run by Triple H, bodes very well for him. Triple H has control over him, Vince McMahon does not. That's a good thing. The only thing that sucks is the name. Buddy Murphy is a terrible name. And it reminded me of some emails I got from a listener back in 2013 when Murphy first signed with WWE. Adrian from Australia, one of our longtime listeners, probably listening right now. He probably doesn't even know that I still have these emails that he sent me, but he sent me two of them. I dug them up. I didn't even know who Murphy was until Adrian emailed me and filled me in. Because he lives down in Australia. He told me all about this guy. He talked this guy up a lot even then, told me all the potential that this guy has. So I want to read you from one of these emails here. This was the first email that Adrian sent me 5 years ago. Okay, he says, I'm sure by now you've heard that Australian wrestler Matt Silva, which was the name he was going by at the time, who was recently signed by WWE. What a pickup for the company. I've been singing this guy's praises for over 4 years now. I had the privilege of working with him when I was an independent wrestler, and this guy has it. He has his final match in Australia in April before relocating to Tampa to join NXT with fellow Aussie Emma, who isn't really that good. Whoops. He said it, not me. WWE will be flushing a lot down the toilet if they don't give him or if they give him some outrageous gimmick. He is a badass, and that is how he should be booked. And then Adrian emailed me a few months later, very upset. He says, Solomon, sir, I emailed you earlier this year about the then new assignee to NXT, Australian heavyweight Matt Silva. I was raving about this pickup. Well, this past week he was given his new name and was saddled with Buddy Murphy. Some drug addict behind the scenes watched The Nutty Professor with the character Buddy Love, played by Eddie Murphy, and decided it would be a fantastic name to give this heavyweight ass kicker from down under. He was very upset. That's the thing I remembered most when I saw that Murphy was back in the news, and I just thought about the name. I'm like, I wonder if I still have Adrian's email. He was very upset. But that's exactly where they got the name from. He's exactly right. They just merged the two together. It's just like there was some Mets fan. There was a writer who was a Mets fan who worked for WWE behind the scenes who thought it would be really cute to call Ken Doan Kenny Dykstra because he was a big Lenny Dykstra fan back in the day. Lenny Dykstra was a baseball player, so they called him Kenny Dykstra. Like, thank God they've eased up on the crappy names now. There's still a few that slipped through. They're not all great. But there was a time when they thought that the name Eli Cottonwood was a good idea. We have come a very long way since then. Also on the show on Tuesday, Drake Maverick, Rockstar Spud, told Jack Gallagher he is no longer allowed to wrestle in a suit. He has to wear regulation ring gear. So Triple H continues to wash the Vince McMahon stink off of 205 Live. Mark Andrews made his 205 Live debut. He beat Akira Tozawa to advance in the next round of the Cruiserweight Tournament. And Drew Gulak beat Tony Nese with the Dragon Sleeper in another first-round match. Gulak was back to being the super serious badass wrestler that he used to be. And by the end of the match, he had me convinced. That was a very scary-looking Dragon Sleeper that he locked in on Tony Nese. The crowd didn't really react much to any of this. I mean, look, and they won't. They're not going to. So long as they insist on shooting this after SmackDown, nothing will change. But this was a great match. Everything right now is laser-focused on this Cruiserweight tournament getting to WrestleMania. It's not about silliness. It's not about nonsense. And I think it makes for a more enjoyable show if you're into the matches. If you are more into the comedy and the gimmicks and the silliness, then you probably hate this new show. You probably hate the new format of 205 Live. And we'll see in due time whose idea is right and whose idea is wrong. You know, if more people are watching or if less people are watching. But right now, I'm enjoying the new direction that they've taken this show in.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Two big matches on NXT this week, the first being Pete Dunne defending his United Kingdom Championship against Roderick Strong. I was kind of surprised they opened the show with this. I thought it was excellent stuff. Dunne did what Dunne does best. He worked over the arm, he worked over the fingers, he bent them back. At one point, he even used Pentagon Jr.'s arm breaker, but shockingly, he didn't break the arm. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Soon you're going to be telling me that wrestling isn't real or something. Mauro Ranallo asked Nigel McGuinness if he would have a problem with an American like Roddy winning the United Kingdom Championship, and Nigel said, yes, I would. He said that he feels that you have to have a title representing the UK, represented by somebody from the UK. And all I can say is, boy, he must have hated Rusev's run with the United States Championship, or Midian, holding the European title. Actually, I think most people probably had a problem with Midian holding the European title, so I can give him a pass on that. Dunne retained after hitting the bitter end. I don't think anybody really expected Roddy to win, but it was still a hell of a match. And, you know, they announced Pete Dunne at 205 pounds when he came out, and he calls himself the Bruiserweight. But normally I'd be very afraid if I heard they wanted to move him to 205 Live, and I haven't heard anything about that. But I would be very worried if I were to hear that, especially even just a few weeks ago. But with Triple H's newfound influence over that show, he's running the show basically over there now, and them taking a more serious approach with that show and cutting back on the comedy and the silliness, it might not be so bad if it actually gets him on Raw sometimes and it gets him more TV time. I think we need to be seeing more Pete Dunne. I don't really care what show it is. As long as we get more of this guy on TV, I think that's a positive. We got Aleister Black in a suit, a black suit, in the ring for a promo. He said that he has a devil on his back, and it's driving him. He said that the devil is the NXT Championship. Doesn't he literally have a giant tattoo of a devil on his back? I think he does. He gets cut off here by Killian Dane's music of Sanity. Killian comes out. He tells Black that it's not the devil on your back, it's me. Poor Aleister. And he said, I won't stop until the NXT title is around my waist. He said, Aleister Black's path will be stopped by chaos. and I was waiting for Okada and Toriano to run in for the beatdown, but it never came. Dane went to go leave. Black told him, "You crossed me, and now you must fade to black." So that should be a fun match. And it's funny, you know, you look at most of the real stars on this show, CN Almas, Drew McIntyre before he got hurt, Aleister Black, Killian Dane's been featured a lot more lately, Pete Dunne, Kairi Sane. I don't want to say the international talent is what's carrying the show, because you have people like Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream and Ember Moon, but the international group, the international contingent of talent that they're building around is a very big part of the success and the appeal that this brand has right now, and I don't think that that can be understated. I don't think people really appreciate that. A lot of that international talent is a lot of the reason why NXT is such a fun show to watch right now. We had a quick, easy win for TM61, leading to Ember Moon and Shayna Baszler in the main event rematch from TakeOver Philly for the NXT Women's Championship. Moon was just right out of the gate, house of fire. All Ember Moon until an eclipse attempt. Baszler bailed to the outside to avoid the move. Instead, Ember did a dive out to the floor, which is not a smart thing to do given that she had tape all over her arm and her arm was still hurt from TakeOver. I know, let's do a dive. And so, of course, she did a dive and she hit the announce desk and she hurt her arm. And that was all Shayna Baszler needed to see. She went right for the arm. It was like a shark tasting blood. And she had Ember on the outside. She fit her arm through one of the metal guardrail barriers. And she's just yanking on the arm and yanking on the arm until Kairi Sane comes out to make the save. And she attacks Shayna for the DQ. We even got some of that old school frantic bell ringing. One of those little things that I love so much. They're ringing the bell and ringing the bell. See, I think it would be much better if they just rang the bell like a maniac whenever chaos breaks out on TV instead of shaking the camera around like a bobblehead. Like, just ring the bell. You don't have to shake the camera, just ring the bell. Last time we saw Kairi on TV, she was choked out and left for dead by Shayna Baszler. Then we saw her in the Royal Rumble, which kind of took away, I think, a little bit from her big dramatic return here, a little bit. After she had seemingly chased Shayna off, Kairi turned her back, and when Shayna rushed back into the ring to go after her, Sane turned around, hit her with a spear. And then she helped Ember up to her feet. So to me, it smells like a three-way at TakeOver in New Orleans. I guess we'll see. They have some time before that show. Maybe they'll do Kairi Sane against Shayna Baszler for the number one contender spot. I don't know. I didn't read the spoilers, but we'll know soon enough. This Wednesday, it is Johnny Gargano in a championship rematch from TakeOver against Andrade Cien Almas. It is Gargano Almas 4 this Wednesday. And I think that, coming off of this Pete Dunne-Roderick Strong match that we had this past week, this show's on a pretty good run right now. If you are not watching NXT, if you've fallen out of NXT, this would be a good time to try to get back into it, because there's been some really, real good stuff on this show lately. Lucha Underground Season 4 is coming. I'm very excited about this. Lucha Underground is coming back. The first batch of tapings for Season 4 will take place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at their new location. They are no longer at the temple in Boyle Heights, which makes me sad. They have created a new temple in downtown LA that they, apparently this place used to be a cold storage warehouse for like 67 years. Head writer Chris DeJoseph gave an interview to Up Rocks where he said that they may film from different locations. This may not be the only place they film from this season. I'm going to be very upset if Dario Cueto was in fact murdered last season and we don't find out that he was wearing a bulletproof vest under his skin or something like that. There's always a way to explain away the fact that somebody, he didn't really die, you know, he was wearing a vest, or he was, you know, we come to find out that he's immortal or something like that. Just any way to keep this guy on the show. It just would not be the same without him. Now, we already know Prince Puma is gone, Rey Mysterio is gone, Sexy Star should be gone. Otherwise, I expect most of the familiar faces to be back. Pentagon Dark is their champion. Cage and Johnny Mundo, both of whom are with Impact now, are also expected back. Mundo, for sure, will be back. I saw an interview he did. He actually did an interview from his ring in his backyard with Chris Van Vliet. He came across just as the nicest guy you'll ever meet. Very down to earth. He's just enjoying all the freedom that he has right now to wrestle wherever he wants. whenever he wants. But he did joke in the interview. He said, you know, if I did come back to WWE, I could teach Roman Reigns how to work. But anyway, so one of my goals this year, I would love to be able to attend a Lucha Underground taping at some point. Come to New York. We've got plenty of shitty little grimy clubs for you to film a few episodes. Come on, come to New York. So here's where things get weird. I wanted to save this for the end of the show before I get to the mailbag. And I'm going to start with this Billy Jack Haynes story. I retweeted a link to the story, so some of you may have read about this a few days ago. But this became news this week. Now, let me preface this by saying that Billy Jack Haynes is not the most credible person in the world. He once claimed that Vince McMahon was Daniel Benoit's real father, and he either killed the Benoit family himself, or, you know, Chris found out about Vince having an affair with Nancy and he snapped and killed everyone. That was from his RF video shoot that he did back in 2009. He was pitching all these different conspiracy theories. Actually, he blames Vince McMahon for killing multiple wrestlers. A few years ago, he even challenged Stone Cold Steve Austin to put up $1 million of his own money to fight him in the UFC. Okay, so this guy is batshit crazy. Now keep that in mind as I tell this story. I thought the story was interesting enough that I wanted to talk about it here. Apparently this was a very famous case, kind of an unsolved mystery, if you will. Now many years ago, there was a TV show called Unsolved Mysteries. Remember, Robert Stack was the host, and it used to creep me out. That music is some of the most creepy music to this day that I've heard for a television show. But they would feature segments on unsolved crime mysteries, and they would have these reenactments that they would do of the crimes. So one of the stories they profiled in the very first season of that show was the death of two teenagers in Arkansas, Don Henry and Kevin Ives. They went out hunting one night in the woods. They never came home. Their bodies were found on the railroad tracks nearby. They had been run over by a train. Apparently the train conductor couldn't stop. The train in time, he ran right over them. They didn't move. They just laid there and he ran them over. And it was claimed that the two boys were passed out on the tracks after smoking a large amount of marijuana, and their deaths were ruled accidental. And there were a lot of things about that case that just made people very suspicious, that made them believe this was a cover-up of some kind. A grand jury even overruled the original ruling because they believed the boys were actually murdered. The belief is now that at least one, if not both of them, were already dead before they ended up on the train tracks. Enter Billy Jack Haynes. Billy Jack Haynes was wrestling for WWE at the time this all went down, in 1987. He has now come forward as a witness and has confessed to having been involved in the cover-up of this crime. He's confessed to being a drug trafficker while he was working for WWE, and he got a call from a local politician slash drug dealer in Arkansas, and he was asked to come in and provide security during a drug drop because this politician suspected, I guess, that some drug money drops were being stolen. Yeah, drug money drops where they would literally drop, you know, from like an airplane or whatever, they would drop duffel bags of drugs in certain locations. In this case, I guess it was a remote wooded area in Arkansas. That was a known spot or a suspected spot where they would have drug drops. And this person suspected that they were being stolen. And some of the state police were involved, he thought. So anyway, he asked Billy to come on in as sort of a heavy to provide security. And Billy agreed to come on in, and he claims that that is where he witnessed the murders of the two boys. That's the basic gist of the story that he's telling now. He claims that on August 23rd of that year, he was on those railroad tracks in Arkansas. He witnessed exactly what happened to those two boys. Now, he realizes that coming forward like this, he could very well end up behind bars. He could end up dead. His safety now is in jeopardy. But he said, I had to tell the truth so that the mother of one of the victims could finally get some closure. He claims he was not taking drugs in 1987, but he was transporting cocaine from Arkansas back to his home state of Oregon. Now, I don't believe for a second, by the way, that he was not taking drugs in 1987, okay? He says he was only transporting them, he wasn't taking them, at a time when it's been said that something like 80 or 90% of the WWE roster was taking drugs, okay? But Billy Jack wasn't, he was clean, he wasn't on anything, okay? I don't believe him. Anyway, 2 days before these two boys were found killed, he was wrestling King Kong Bundy in Detroit. There's house show results that show that he wrestled Bundy in a whipping match. And on the day of the alleged murders, WWE ran three different house shows, and Billy Jack Haynes is not listed on any of those shows. So it's entirely possible that he could have been in Arkansas that day. Now, this part here is from a story that ran on the KATV website, which is the ABC affiliate in Little Rock. Haynes says that drugs were regularly being dropped along a set of train tracks near the Pulaski Saline County line, and a recent drop had been intercepted. Haynes was being asked to make sure that did not happen again. A retired Little Rock police detective says the men were parked there when an airplane flew over, dropping parachutes with duffel bags, and that he watched people pick, I guess that means Billy Jack, watch people pick up those duffel bags and leave the area. And according to Haynes, all of a sudden he hears a gunshot. And then he hears somebody say, a motorcycle, I guess, driving down the tracks, at which point one of the men says, "Go get him." And two guys jump in a car and speed off. And Haynes says the two boys were caught by two of the officers, the lawmen, at a convenience store about a mile away. They threw the kids down on the ground, and he claims that one of them was beaten to death. He swears that it wasn't him, he didn't kill the boys, he only participated in disposing of the bodies. He helped get them down on the tracks, he positioned the rifle that they had on them because they were out, you know, the boys had a 22, I think they said, they had a rifle, they were out with a flashlight, they were deer hunting. So all he did was he helped position the bodies on the tracks, put the rifle next to the bodies. Okay, and so that's his only role in this, he claims, beyond providing security for this other drug trafficker. Nobody bought the initial ruling that the kids smoked so much pot they passed out unconscious on the track. I think they found a little bit of marijuana in their system, but not that much that it would knock them out. And most people believe that those two kids were murdered. The whole thing is pretty wild. The case is still open. If you read up on the case itself, it's pretty famous. There's definitely... You read all of the facts about the case, and you definitely come away thinking something shady happened. Now, as far as Billy Jack goes, the guy's... Yeah, look, he may be a total whack job. I believe he is, but maybe he's got a guilty conscience, and he's trying to make amends after all these years. The only other explanation I could think of is that he's suffering from dementia and he's gone totally insane. Because why else would you admit to being involved in a double murder? But the problem is here, this guy has no credibility. Is he telling the truth? I don't know. I'm inclined to say no. But why else would he come forward and admit to being part of something like this? At the very least, I would think it's worth looking into. It's worth investigating. Apparently, you know, he was hawking in this video online. He was hawking this GoFundMe. There's like a private investigator who's trying to raise money so that they can interview witnesses. I mean, I start hearing about GoFundMe and give money to the GoFundMe and I start to get a little suspicious. But just a wild random story that came out of nowhere this week. And it adds to the stories of the past that Billy Jack has told. He's told a lot of very wild tales. Some of which are just completely, utterly, totally unbelievable. Is this one of them? I don't know. If it is not true, it's a very shitty thing to do, I think, to that kid's mother, who is still holding on to hope that one day they'll find out what happened and bring those men to justice. And I certainly hope that he is not preying on her hope that one day they'll find the truth by coming out with this cockamamie story. Hopefully there is something to it. And look, if he's trying to make amends for what he feels he did wrong, then, you know, good for him. But there may be some legal consequences, you know, as a result. Now, that may not even be the craziest story I heard this week. There were two other stories involving wrestling writers, both of whom, it appears, faked cancer and also faked their own deaths. This is real. This is not kayfabe news. And since, you know, I hear fake cancer and all this other stuff, and since this hits close to home for me, this pissed me off beyond belief when I first heard about these stories. So you may remember a website called TNA Mecca. Okay, I had some fun with them many years ago. There were a lot of very, shall we say, passionate people on that website, some very loyal, diehard TNA fans who I know didn't like me very much. Anyway, the site was run by a guy named Chris Regal. And a little over a year ago, news broke that he had passed away after a battle with cancer. Then last summer, rumors began to surface that he may have faked his own death. There were quote unquote family members who popped up. I think a brother and maybe a sister who were sort of writing, and people suspected it wasn't a brother, it wasn't a sister, it was him pretending to be them, masquerading as them. Who even knows if he has siblings in real life? And they would post on Chris's behalf because he was still lurking. He still wanted to be part of that whole community, but, you know, he couldn't, right? He couldn't come clean, and this was his way of doing that. In any event, he posted a long blog this week on TNA Mecca. He admitted that he tried to commit suicide at the end of 2016. His family intervened. They stepped in and saved his life. But before the suicide attempt, he fabricated a story to tell his friends and the other people who worked on the website with him that he was dying from cancer. And he finally came clean this week. And all I can say is, fuck anyone who lies about having cancer. Let me just say that. Okay? Which brings me to this other winner. This woman named Abby Arthur. She had been an editor for a wrestling news website. She was an occasional guest host on a podcast called The Angry Marks. She conned everybody, including them, into believing that she had been suffering from cancer. Late stage cancer. And that, you know, I need people to donate funds to me. She set up a GoFundMe last summer. People donated as much as $10,000 to this woman's GoFundMe. Only for her story to come unraveled this week. People were very suspicious because she had been posting photos of herself hooked up to IVs and whatnot that really were not photos of her at all. People started doing reverse image searches on Google and found these photos on other websites and blogs belonging to actual cancer patients. And when people called her out on it, she started blocking them. She deleted all of her tweets. Then her account got suspended. Other accounts started popping up. And that's not even the half of it. Apparently, she was either on parole or probation for her last scam when she first started this one. And wouldn't you know it, she too is now faking her death. Somebody popped up as her sister claiming that you people are responsible for her death. She died the other night and blah, blah, blah. So she faked her own death as well. I can think of few things sicker than pretending to have cancer or some kind of terminal illness and preying on people's goodwill, preying on their good intentions just to scam them out of money. There is a special place in hell for people like that. All right, let's step out of the Twilight Zone here and into the mailbag. This week's mailbag is sponsored by Audible, our good partners at audible.com. We still have our very special offer going for listeners of this podcast where you can cash in on your 30-day Audible trial for one free Audible book. You get one free audio book if you sign up using our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Go through the sign-up process. You can try the service for 30 days. In those 30 days, if you would like, you can cancel at any time, but in those 30 days, you can cash in on one free audiobook of your choice. It could be any wrestling book, any non-wrestling book. Even if you cancel your trial on day 29 for whatever reason, you get to keep that book no matter what. It belongs to you. So take advantage of the offer, audibletrial.com/solomonster. It is exclusive for listeners of this podcast. Get your free book right now. And by the way, if you are interested in sponsoring the mailbag, or have any other business inquiries you'd like to direct my way, you can shoot me an email. As you all can, if you have questions for the mailbag, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Nick from Germany. The Elimination Chamber match will now have 7 participants. What if WWE takes one of its beloved shark cages, hangs it above the ring inside the structure, and they pull or put Elias inside and let him have a concert until he has to enter the match? When he enters, he gets ripped apart by the other participants. No shark cage. One of those silly gimmicks, they overuse it. Just put him in a pod. Just put him in a pod, let him do a concert in there. I'm sure he's going to. And when it's his time to enter, have everybody turn their attention to him. Everybody stops what they're doing. They all look over and look at him. They... He keeps himself locked inside this pod as long as possible. He doesn't want to come out. They all break down the glass. They drag him out. They kick his ass. They take turns hitting their finishers on him, and they pin him. Because to me, he's either in there for comedy or he's not. You've got 6 other guys in this match. He'll still be the most entertaining part of the match. He'll be one of the more memorable parts probably of this chamber match if he's in there, playing music the whole time. But this only works if everybody gangs up on him and then they eliminate him when he's done playing. So that's how I would do it. Rohan from Ventura, California. I've only been listening for a few months, but I absolutely love the show. Well, thank you. With Don Callis being involved with both Impact and New Japan, could you see them rekindling their previous working relationship? I know it was broken off because of how Okada was handled, but with Callis calling the shots, I think it could really benefit both companies. Absolutely. In fact, there was a report a few months ago that said Impact Management had traveled to Japan, and on that visit, they stopped over at a New Japan show. And Scott D'Amore, I don't think Callis was there, but Scott D'Amore went up to Okada and apologized to him for the way that he was booked during his time in TNA all those years ago. I don't think they met with any New Japan officials, but they would love to work with them again. Absolutely. TNA would love to work, or Impact, I'm sorry, would love to work with New Japan. The problem is Ring of Honor works with New Japan. New Japan has a relationship already with Ring of Honor, and I don't think they want to do anything to jeopardize that. There was a lot of bad blood between Impact and ROH last year when they sent them that cease and desist on the Broken Hardy stuff. It was right before one of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view shows, and they sent them a cease and desist, and it really screwed things up. They sent the cease and desist to the pay-per-view companies, which was even worse, and I think one of them didn't even air the show that night. I don't remember if it was DirecTV or Dish. It might have been Dish. And so they really screwed with ROH at the very last second. I have not heard that the two companies have mended fences since then, but if they can find their way back to being in a comfortable relationship together, that might be the key to getting New Japan comfortable with working with them again. Anything is possible. I think any sort of talent exchange would benefit both companies. Impact needs New Japan more than New Japan needs Impact, I think, but if New Japan's trying to expand into the U.S., right, and they're trying to expand their footprint in the U.S. market, getting some of its talent TV time, even if it is only on Pop TV, that can't be a bad thing. Tony from Liverpool, you answered a mailbag question last week regarding NXT getting its own Royal Rumble over Rumble weekend. I agree with your answer that three Rumbles would be too many. Do you think NXT having their own G1-style tournament would be a good alternative? It could start the first full sail show after SummerSlam weekend. With NXT only being an hour long, it could run right on through the finals being held at TakeOver during Royal Rumble weekend. What are your thoughts? I don't know if it would run from SummerSlam to Rumble or like October, November to the Rumble maybe, but I like that idea a lot better. I really do. A G1 style round robin that runs a few months and climaxes Royal Rumble weekend with the winner becoming number one contender for the championship over WrestleMania weekend. I like that idea a lot. I'd love to see something like that on the main roster. Excuse me, but with the brand split and the way that WWE does television, I just don't think it would work. I mean, you know, their TV is very story-driven, even more than NXT. You know, with NXT, there's stories, but there's also a lot of focus on the in-ring, you know, on the matches and the physical stuff, and, you know, the matches are 4 stars, 5 stars. Like, that's an important part, I think, of what makes NXT so appealing. And why those TakeOver shows are so great is that's where the real focus is. And it's, I don't want to say the opposite, but with WWE, there is a lot of silliness and there's storylines and illegitimate children and all of this stuff that don't really, it doesn't tie in with a round robin style tournament. If you're just having random matches with no story behind them, I don't know how much, you know, fans who are casual fans who watch Raw and SmackDown, you know, how much they're going to really be able to get into that. I think for you and I think we could get into it just fine, but I think the audience at large might not be as into that. So that's why I think it probably works a lot better if it was an NXT thing and not a main roster thing. But, you know, with NXT, like I said, it's almost more sport-driven. Maybe that's sort of the analogy I'm looking to make. It's almost more sport-driven under Triple H than it is under Vince McMahon. You see a little bit of that now with the way he's handling the Cruiserweight tournament on 205 Live. All the silliness, all the games, all the gimmicks, it sort of fall to the wayside. And it's all about the matches. It's all about building to that championship match at WrestleMania. NXT would be a better fit. So long as Vince McMahon is still running the show with Raw and SmackDown, then I think NXT would be a better fit. Anthony in Philadelphia, I know the illegitimate child, speaking of which, I know the illegitimate child storylines don't really work out in WWE. For example, Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle and Hornswoggle, Fit Finlay, Ken Kennedy, and Vince McMahon. But how do you think an NXT illegitimate son storyline would work out with William Regal and Pete Dunne? There's a story going back to when they were in the UK tournament with there being tension between them. I see a little bit of Regal in Dunne. What say you? I would argue, first of all, I don't want to see NXT infected by this stupid storyline bullshit when it comes to illegitimate kids. And keep that on the main roster, okay? We don't need that in NXT. But you mentioned, you sort of lumped Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle into the whole thing where, you know, illegitimate son storylines don't work out. I got to fight you on that because it's still early. It's still in progress. And Jason Jordan is getting over. Now, he's getting over as a heel. I don't know if that was their original intent. I almost think it had to be, because if you look at the way he was being booked and how almost over the top he was, like, I'm Kurt's son, and they had to know from day one that this guy was going to get booed. I mean, they can't be that naive. So, you know, he's getting over as a heel. It sucks that he's hurt right now, but I think it's working. I still think it's corny as hell. I wouldn't have done it. I would have tried to introduce him in some other way. He could have been Kurt's apprentice or something. You could have linked him to Kurt Angle without him being his son. But the fact is, I think it's unfair to lump that in there because I do think it is working. Now, that said, I would like to see them put this illegitimate kid crap to bed once and for all after this. I mean, how many illegitimate kids can there be in one company? I don't want some epidemic of illegitimate kids. Not that there's anything wrong with being an illegitimate kid, but I just think doing that storyline on TV 2-3 different times is a bit much. And plus, I think Pete Dunne is better than that, and people are not going to believe it anyway. They don't buy the Kurt Angle Jason Jordan thing. That thing is so unbelievable as it is. All of a sudden, we're supposed to believe that Pete Dunne is William Regal's son. Hey, come on. You know, I almost think for the NXT audience, it would be a slap in the face. Ryan from Colorado, what do you think of King Kong Bundy becoming Braun Strowman's manager? Not that Strowman really needs one, but Bundy is a pretty damn good promo. Yeah, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it. Plus, Bundy's not on great terms with the company, as evidenced by the fact that he never does anything with them. I wish they would do something with him. I once pitched the idea on the show of Bundy hosting a talk show segment on TV called The Five Count. You know, Bundy used to do stand-up comedy. He's a pretty funny guy. He's a very, he's a charismatic guy. And I think he could be very entertaining. And I think it would be cool for them to go back and pick out these legends or these older stars who used to work for them. And in Bundy's case, I mean, he headlined a WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan, right? He never won a championship there, but he'll always have that. He'll always be able to say, I headlined WrestleMania in a cage against Hulk Hogan. But it would be nice for them to kind of dig back into their bag of legends every now and then. And when they bring them in a way where you can actually get some use out of them. So maybe you throw some money their way, you give them a job, you find a role for them, but you know, you plug them into the show in a way that enhances the show in some way. And it makes sense. So there's so many talking segments on TV that you can find time to have some kind of special segment where, let's say, he hosts. Even if he's only interviewing heels, right? Because Bundy was always a heel. And it's a little stage thing off to the side. Or I guess these days they'd probably just do it in the middle of the ring. And he interviews people. He doesn't have to be on the show every single week. Like Jerry Lawler used to do the King's Court shows. And Lawler was always pretty funny. And I don't see why you can't find a role for someone like Bundy on the show. So I know it's completely random and it's completely unnecessary. But I think that would be a much better role for him than being Braun Strowman's manager. Believe me, Braun Strowman don't need no manager. He's doing just fine on his own. Todd from Louisville, Kentucky. I recently read that Shawn Michaels forfeited three major titles. One we all know was the WWF title when he lost his smile, but I don't remember the other two. What were they? Shawn Michaels has a very odd history of winning championships and not actually losing them. Now, he did lose a bunch of titles to different people. You know, he lost the IC title once to Marty Jannetty, the WWF title to Sid and Steve Austin, albeit begrudgingly so, as Undertaker has told the story of having to make sure Shawn did the right thing that night. But you go back to that time the Rockers won the tag team titles from the Hart Foundation, which never... It never aired on TV. It was never acknowledged. The only time I ever saw it was on some DVD they put out. That was the match where the rope broke in the middle of the match. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match. And after the rope broke, you know, things sort of fell apart after that. Plus, I think Jim Neidhart was leaving. He was going to leave the company, so they wanted to get the belts off the Hart Foundation, but then he changed his mind and he was going to stick around. And so they decided to just not even acknowledge the title change at all. So that was weird. And then his second run with the Intercontinental title ended with him being stripped. He failed the test for steroids, which I don't think he admits to, but that's supposedly what happened. His third IC title run, that was the one he won from Jeff Jarrett. That ended a couple months later when he got beaten up by a bunch of Marines. And so he had to walk out on TV with a black eye and literally hand the belt over to Dean Douglas. He never actually lost it to him. His first real tag team title run was with Diesel in 94. He gave that title up after he had a falling out on TV with Diesel in storyline. And then Diesel won the world title a few days later. I think a year after that, he and Diesel won the tag team belt again. But they pinned the Illegal Man. That was that pay-per-view where they had that triple header match. All the championships were on the line. And Owen Hart was running late. And so the British Bulldog filled in for him. He teamed up with Yokozuna. And then at the very end of that match, Owen Hart ran in and Diesel powerbombed him and pinned him. But I guess he wasn't technically the legal man in the match. And so they had to forfeit the belt back to Owen Hart and Yokozuna the very next night. They never lost those either. Then he won the tag team titles with Steve Austin in 97. And again, the titles ended up vacated. Sean had his little hair-pulling matchup with backstage with Bret Hart. And then he was like, unsafe work environment. And he left and he was trying to leave and he was off TV for a few weeks. So they forfeited those belts. Earlier that same year was the whole situation with the WWF title where he lost his smile. So yeah, Sean has a very spotty history when it comes to dropping championships. But that would pretty much account for all of them, I think. Kevin in Albany. People on the internet are typically negative, so it's no surprise to see people saying that this will kill the mid-card in reference to news of the dual-branded pay-per-views. But could this actually be the start of WWE giving their superstars some sort of off-season? You have to think that with all the injuries, it's clear these guys need a rest. So every few months, each brand shuffles half a dozen superstars and takes them off of television. I don't get that sense at all. I don't know where you're getting that from. Let me tell you something. Under Vince McMahon, there will never be an off season. I've gotten questions over the years about off seasons. I've pitched my own ideas for off seasons going back 8-9 years now. And here we are now, a decade later. I've been doing the show over 10 years. No off season. Not even a hint. So as long as Vince McMahon is in power and running the show, there will be no off season. I'm not so sure there would be one under Triple H either. But you know what? Under new leadership, Triple H is a former wrestler. He's been through the grind. He knows what it's like. Anything's possible. I can't sit here and say that when Triple H takes over one day, there won't be something like an offseason. I still wouldn't expect it, but there's at least a chance. But right now, believe me, this company is not selling themselves to, or their TV to NBC or making a pitch to Fox. On their next television contract with the idea of going dark for a time or there being any kind of formal off-season. They have 52 weeks out of the year that they have television. They have television 52 weeks out of the year. They have a 3-hour show to fill every Monday. What they should do, and this is what I've proposed in the past, is that they cycle people out. They rotate them out on a set schedule, which is similar, kind of similar to what you're saying, but not exactly. But they absolutely should. Will they? No. They haven't yet. Why would they start now? Why? Why? Because some guys are hurt? They go through this once in a while. Every now and then they have this rash of injuries where guys, half a dozen guys get hurt all at once. It's not like they haven't been through this before. It never stopped them before. All they do... is they just plug somebody else in. There's always somebody who's itching to get that spot. Somebody goes down to injury, there's always somebody on standby waiting to be plugged into that spot. We've seen it recently with Samoa Joe and Elias. They just plugged Elias in there to take all of his spots that he would have taken. with Cena in the Rumble. I'm sure Joe would have been in the chamber, so instead, Elias becomes the beneficiary. You think Elias wishes that he had an off-season so he could be off right now on vacation? No, he's happy. He's got to be happy as hell that he's able to take advantage of this and get TV time. I don't know that these guys would want something like that, because they probably would look at it and go, well, am I losing money because I'm not working? If I'm not on TV, I can't promote my t-shirts? Like, I don't know that a lot of them would even want something like this. I'm sure some of them would. Some of them might not want them. They might not want the time off. You might have to force them. You might have to coerce them into taking time off, because that's not their mentality. Their mentality is, you go. You know, you have a show every week, you go. But the man who runs this company is a workaholic. He sleeps 3 hours a night. He makes his talent work on Christmas and New Year's. He doesn't believe in vacation days. What makes you think that he's suddenly going to be open to the idea of an off-season? Jack from Boston, Lincolnshire, England. Hope I pronounced that right. I recently read about Antonio Inoki flying to Iraq to try and free some hostages back in 1990. Could you please explain what happened, why Inoki went, and if he was successful? Yeah, that's a crazy story. I don't think they mentioned that when WWE inducted him into their Hall of Fame. I had heard about it, something about hostages being freed, but I didn't have all the details, so I looked it up. What happened was, Inoki got into politics in 1989. Okay, he was a famous wrestler for so many years, and he decided to parlay that into a career in politics in 89. So not long after that, there were about 100 Japanese families living in Iraq who were effectively taken hostage. Okay, they were arrested. They were held by Saddam Hussein's government. Inoki wanted to fly to Iraq and try, because I guess whatever the government was doing wasn't enough. It wasn't working. He wanted to take action himself. So he flew to Iraq three different times in the months that followed. He tried to help free the remaining hostages, because the women and children, I guess, had already been released. And so he wanted to try to free all the men. He wanted to try to free the rest of them. And Inoki, on one of his trips, organized a peace festival. It had wrestlers, rock musicians, basketball players, soccer players, all kinds of athletes and other entertainers. And there was a letter that he had written that I guess somehow had made it all the way to Saddam Hussein. And he ends up meeting with Uday, who is one of Saddam's sons. I'm sure that name might ring a bell if you remember back, was it 03, I guess, 02, 03. Saddam's two sons, Uday and Kusei, Dumb and Dumber as I call them, when they were killed. That was fun. Well, anyway, he and the remaining hostages, Inoki that is, and the remaining hostages, they meet with Uday, who says that by order of my father, the remaining 40 or so hostages will be free to return home. And he even apologized for holding the Japanese hostages for so long. So yes, Inoki did in fact have a hand in helping free some of the hostages. I mean, exactly how many can you credit to him? I don't know. But he tried, he played a role, and in the end, they were released. There's a great story on Grantland about it from a few years ago, back when Grantland was still a thing. I know it really isn't anymore, but that article is online if you want to look it up. There's a lot more details in there. I also found a New York Times article from December 5th, 1990, that talked about Inoki going to Iraq with this delegation of rock musicians and wrestlers and martial artists for this two-day festival of peace to try to win the release of the hostages, so they talk about that as well. Inoki is a fascinating guy. He really is. He has lived quite the life. There's a lot of good and a lot of bad that can be said about him, but he is this larger-than-life personality when you read up on him and learn more about him. Dominic from Fleetwood, England. I've been watching every WWE title change, and I have a question. Is there a reason for the title change between The Undertaker and Hulk Hogan in November of 1991? For all of the title changes. Based on the lineage of that title up to that point, the length of the reigns really stand out, ignoring Andre's quote-unquote reign in 1988, and the title was vacated a week after Survivor Series. So basically what happened there is they had this idea for a pay-per-view called Tuesday in Texas. They were going to try a weekday pay-per-view. This was an experiment that they wanted to try, and so they needed something compelling to get people to buy the pay-per-view, because they had Survivor Series. Back then, I think Survivor Series was still Thanksgiving Eve, I think, at that point. It might have been Thanksgiving Day when it first started, but then it was Thanksgiving Eve. So less than a week later was going to be this Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. And they needed something compelling for it. So they did the title change. They had Ric Flair interfere. He helped Undertaker win the championship from Hulk Hogan. They immediately set up a rematch that very night during the pay-per-view. They started promoting the rematch for Tuesday in Texas. So talk about double dipping. You know, you get people to pay for the Survivor Series. And as that pay-per-view is happening, you're trying to convince people to pay for this other pay-per-view less than a week later. I think it was less than a week. My dates could be off. It might have been a week and a half. It was very shortly, though, after the Survivor Series that this show was taking place. And I don't think it did very well because they did it the one time and they didn't do another pay-per-view, I think, on a Tuesday until Taboo Tuesday, which was, what, 15 years later, I think, when they first started doing... it then became Cyber Sunday and then that didn't do well, so they stopped doing it. So that's it. It was an experiment. It didn't work. Not enough people bought the show, so they didn't do it again. But that's the only reason for the title change, because Hogan immediately won the belt back, and then they vacated it, and then they ended up putting it on Ric Flair. But they needed some kind of hook to get people to buy that show, and they thought that that was interesting enough, people would want to see Hulk Hogan try to get the belt back. And finally here, Frank from Atlanta, Georgia, buy or sell on the better odd couple tag team, the Rock and Sock Connection or Booker T and Goldust? I like Rock and Mankind together. They were very entertaining, but I'm going with Booker T and Goldust. I'm buying on them. I'm selling on the Rock and Sock. Booker T and Goldust, it's one of those combinations where when you first hear about it, it's like, Booker T and Goldust. Like, what a step down for Booker T. What a random pairing. But then they gel and they form this chemistry and it's like, man, I can't believe this was like the tag team I never knew I wanted so badly. I still remember some of those segments they did on TV. They did like a movie review segment once. I remember Goldust dressed up as the crocodile hunter guy, Steve Irwin. And he sort of snuck into the NWO locker room. Just to show you how much of a joke the NWO was at this point. Big Show was sleeping on a couch and snoring, and Goldust was making fun of him. But a lot of the stuff they did was very entertaining. I love the back and forth with Booker and Goldust. They just built this chemistry that was so much fun to watch. It was one of the few things on Raw back during that period that I actually liked. So I got to buy on Booker and Goldust. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can always direct them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I mentioned earlier that I'm going to have details very soon on our WrestleMania weekend meetup in New Orleans. We are going to have a meetup. It won't be a live show, but it'll be a meetup very similar to what we do, you know, SummerSlam weekend in Brooklyn, what we did last year in Orlando. I can tell you that it will be the morning of WrestleMania, so it will not be Saturday. It will not be the Monday after Mania. It will be WrestleMania Sunday, starting late that morning and going for a few hours up until the point that everybody has to leave and head to the dome for WrestleMania. So in terms of location and specific time and all that, I'll have that for you probably in the next week or two. And I am looking forward to seeing all of you there. Also, don't forget, we are now available to stream or download on Spotify. This has been a long time coming, very long time coming, and I'm glad that we are on there now. And it should make things a lot easier for some of you who I know also use Spotify. I'm hoping that it kind of refreshes and updates the show very quickly after I publish it. I know sometimes Stitcher can take forever. That's out of my hands. Same thing with Spotify. So this will be the first time I'll have to check and see how quickly the show posts to Spotify after I upload it. Hopefully it doesn't take very long at all. So please listen to us on there, or you can listen to us on Stitcher as well. Leave us a review there. Leave us an iTunes review. We are a 5-star rated podcast. I appreciate all of your support. Don't forget to buy the new shirt in our store. Always point to the sign. Get your shirt in time for WrestleMania. I want to see some of you wearing that shirt at the meetup. So head on over to Pro Wrestling Tees for that. Next weekend is episode 536. That will be predictions for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which is next Sunday. All the other news and notes from the week. Hopefully nothing as crazy as some of the stories I talked about this week, people faking their deaths and whatnot. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good President's Day if you have off for the holiday tomorrow, and I will see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend, talking Elimination Chamber. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salah Monster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face. Oh, oh my God. God, what do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish a thousand deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope, and we could fade to commercial.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Salah Monster sounds off. Available at thesalahmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.